Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton here. And for those of you listening in the future, you fancy people with your time machines, this program was recorded on Tuesday, April 9th, 2019. Those of you who are participating on Facebook Live, welcome to the live event. Very soon, the bell will ring. Large sweaty men will jump off of things in the corners of the ring and excitement will ensue. Yes. Oh my goodness. One of two things must happen. I must have more caffeine or less. I don't know which it is. Oh, good Tuesday morning to you. Mark Congleton here, hoping you are having a terrific day so far. I'm just kind of piddling through my morning so far because I have one of those annual doctor's exams coming up later today. And so really all I've had is some coffee. And because they're doing blood work and the like, they tell you, well, don't eat before you come in. Nothing after midnight. So about the time for me to leave to go for my appointment to see, you know, for them to poke all over me and fuss at me about being a little overweight and to draw blood and the like, about that time, I will be wondering if it really is illegal to eat your dog, because I'm already really, really hungry. And so there's no telling what today's edition of the Daily Perspective will turn out like. Oh, man. But I've been skimming through Twitter as the intro music was playing. And I got to tell you, some of the people on Twitter are very funny and some of them are just stupid. Just stupid. You may be familiar. This is not in the stupid category. This is in the category. You may be familiar with talk show host Michael Berry. He's from Houston, Texas. He posted on Twitter a little while ago. He retweeted somebody from CNBC about a simple trick, a tipping trick that could save you over $400 a year. And it's a little video about 2 minutes long. And his comment is, I bet the very millennials so keen to tip less are the same folks demanding restaurants pay a $15 per hour minimum wage. They also make zero charitable contributions and complain about rich people while they pay $1,200 a month to lease a BMW. He's absolutely right. He's absolutely right. These same people they're the same people who will, let's see if I can pull this list up here. Yeah, they're the ones. They use an iPhone. They read on a Kindle. They watch Netflix. They shop on Amazon. They search using Google. They sell things on eBay. They pay with Venmo. They book rides with Uber. They drive using the Waze app. And they book their vacation stays with Airbnb. All of these people. And every one of those things is a capitalist endeavor. So these same people they're talking out of one side of their mouth and living out of the other side of their mouth. They're hypocrites. They always are. They benefit, every last one of them, they benefit from capitalism. Sorry, I'm a little distracted here. I've just realized, I don't have my story up. They benefit from what capitalism accomplishes, and if they did not, they could not complain about capitalism. And yet, the irony is, they don't see it. They take pictures of things they hate. They compose memes of things about topics, and they communicate with each other and their like-minded friends using products which are the product of capitalism. Without capitalism, these people would not have a life. They are privileged in America to benefit from capitalism, and yet they want it ended. They want it severely controlled. That's the voice of those who realize they can't get by without it. So they think government should step in and deeply control capitalism. Bless their hearts. They just don't understand. Or do they? It makes me wonder. At any rate, that's just a little bit of what Twitter is like this morning. I just, I let's see. Oh, here's another one. I don't know if you've seen this lately, but there is, you know, I talk about talking points where you'll start seeing a common thread coming from people on the left, particularly politicians, and then it starts popping up in news commentary. Well, the latest thing that I've seen, one of the latest things I've seen, is this demand that President Trump, in order to solve the border crisis, this demand that President Trump help establish jobs in the countries these people are coming from. In other words, throw more of our money at these countries with corrupt leftist leaders who take that money and then don't do what they're supposed to do with it. Throw more of your tax dollars at the countries these people are escaping so they'll stay there. Yeah. In fact, it came up on The View. I saw a blurb about that earlier this morning. It was actually said on The View, well, he needs to create more jobs in these countries so they'll stay there. They'll be happy to stay there. Really? Really? Who are you listening to for your economic wisdom? That's just insane. Well, Chuck Woolery, you remember Chuck Woolery, yeah? I follow Chuck on Twitter, and he posts some interesting stuff. He says, Congresswoman Hirono, Democrat, Hawaii, according to her, this is how we fix the crisis at the border. Trump needs to create more jobs in the countries of Central America so people won't come here. It's not enough to create jobs in America. He has to create jobs in the rest of the world. And Chuck is absolutely right. This insanity says that our president, the president of the United States, must create jobs in other countries. These countries which have failed, these countries which condemn the United States of America for its prosperity, these countries which are oppressing their people with crushing debt, these people are so poor. They come here, and when they live off of our welfare system, and yes, liberals, they are living off of our welfare system. When they come here and live off of our welfare system, it's so much better than where they came from. They're happy to be here. You see, the poor people in America are better off than 80% of the rest of the world. And people from 80% of the rest of the world are finding ways to sneak into our country just to be poor. That's how bad things are everywhere else and how good things are here. I've told you several times, you need to travel. Now, I'm not a world traveler. From time to time, Dave, my radio partner Dave Mack, talks about, you know, you've traveled a lot. Well, I've been on a few cruises. I've been on a few Caribbean cruises, and that's all it takes. Book a cruise. Go to the Bahamas. Take a three-day, two-night weekend cruise to Nassau. That's all you need to do. Book the cheapest cabin on the ship. Just go to Nassau in the Grand Bahamas. Take a tour, and go to the fortress at the top of the hill above the harbor, the fortress which has never been used in a military fashion because they've never been involved in a military move. And then walk around the outside. Don't bother going inside. You don't even have to pay a couple of bucks to go inside the fortress. The rocks on the outside look just like the rocks on the inside. Walk around behind it and look at the houses down behind that fortress. You'll see toilets, used old toilets in the backyards, garbage. You'll see houses falling apart. If you take a longer tour around the island, you'll see shacks. If you walk just a block or so outside of the tourist area, you know, that fringe area right by the harbor, where you can book taxis to go over to the Atlantis Hotel. You've seen those ads on TV. You see them all the time for Atlantis, right? Summer's coming. They're pushing tourism. Just that frontage area with all of those shops where you can spend your American money, go a block or two beyond. No, don't go more than a block beyond. I won't tell you to do that. My wife Jane and I have done that. We were looking for lower-priced souvenir T-shirts because when you buy in the shops on the harbor, you pay full boat. I mean, they it's just crazy. But if you go back a block or two, you can find some shops here and there that are selling souvenir T-shirts that are not the best quality, but at least, hey, you got something from the Bahamas, right? We did that, and I felt unsafe the entire time. My head was on a swivel. I was wondering, this guy coming, should we cross the street? I mean, it was like being in the shadier parts of your town where you live. In America, the poor have it better than 80% of the world's population. And we're supposed to help these nations by giving our tax dollars, your money, my money, to these countries to help build business that can employ people. And these countries, many of them, they're leaders. They chum up to us when they need something, but they condemn us when they don't. And the reason we don't deal with them is because many, many times, every time when we deal with them, they take the money that we give them and they don't use it the way we agreed. Puerto Rico is a good example. Puerto Rico is, they're trying so hard to make it the 51st state. We send them hurricane relief. And do you remember the video of that mayor whose name escapes me right now? The mayor standing in front of TV cameras complaining about the fact that the people were starving because America, because Donald Trump was evil and wouldn't send them relief. Do you remember what was in the background as she stood there demonizing the president of the United States for not sending relief? What was in the background? Pallet upon pallet upon pallet of American relief. And the money we've sent, where is it being spent? What's being done with it? What you've got in Puerto Rico and places like that are little banana republics with corrupt administrations that take that money and disperse it in ways that were not intended. And that's one thing the president lately has talked about. But we're supposed to throw more money at places like this so their people won't come here. This is the kind of insanity that you hear on the leftist crazy train. This is the kind of lunacy that they expect you to just accept. And what's sad is a lot of people just accept it. Oh yeah, that makes sense. We should help them more. We're really rich. Do you know how far in debt our government has driven this country? You can't imagine what $1 trillion looks like. Most of us can't imagine what $1 million looks like. Or $1 billion, which is 1,000 times $1 million. And then there's the trillion, which is 1,000 times $1 billion. Well, our government has driven us over $20 trillion into debt. But we're rich enough to give more. That's the solution we're hearing coming from the left wing. It's insane, but that's normal when you're dealing with these people. Because they know, I know I sound like a broken record, they know that the people they're talking to aren't really paying attention. That they just accept what they hear on the evening news. So they offer up these solutions when the news cameras are pointed at them, and then those solutions are repeated by idiots like Joy Behar on The View. and by Congresswoman Hirono of Hawaii. These aren't solutions. They're just throwing more money at a problem that can't be solved by throwing money at it. Bless their hearts, and bless the hearts of those who accept what they say. And that's just a slice of life on the crazy train. And the crazy train continues coming up after the break as today's edition of the Daily Perspective continues. This is the Daily Perspective, and I am Mark Congleton, your sometimes humble host. Glad to have you along today. Thank you so much for being there, whether you're part of the party live here on Facebook Live. That happens weekday mornings from, it's for an hour, starting at 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock Central. And also, there's the podcast, to which you may subscribe through iTunes and Google Podcast, either way. And yesterday, by the way, podcast subscribers, my apologies for yesterday, because I did everything I always do every single day. And while I was out running around yesterday, I pulled the podcast up just to listen to make sure everything was kosher and it wouldn't play. And so when I got back to the studio, I re-upped it. I uploaded it again and voila, it played. So I don't know what was wrong. I got no error messages when I did the original upload. Everything was as it always is. But yesterday, for some reason, for most of the day, the podcast wasn't available, and I apologize for that. After I fixed it, I got a note from my friend Joel, who lives in Hawaii, and he said, hey, it's just not working. So Joel, I got that fixed for you. And I was just as surprised as you were. I honestly was. Well, I referred to the crazy train, and I got to be honest with you, it's time to jump on the crazy train. Here we go, kids.
All aboard!
Oh, man. Senator Bernie Sanders, bless his heart, he has long fought to restore voting rights for felons who've completed their prison sentences. And there are those who say, you know, that makes sense. They've done their time. They've served their sentence in prison. Why should we prevent them from voting? Shouldn't we restore their rights as citizens if they've done their time? That does, on one level, make sense. On another, that losing your right to vote is part of the penalty you pay for crossing the boundary line we set up, called laws, federal laws. You lose your right to participate in the process which creates law. If you break law, you should not take part in the process of making law. And on our level, that means voting for the people who go to Washington, D.C. and craft these laws. So if you break them, you break federal law, you don't get the right to help create law. And that means voting. And personally, me, I think that should apply for the rest of your life. If you break federal law, then for the rest of your life, you no longer can participate in the process of making law. That's just how I see it. Even if you've done your time, even if you have fulfilled your sentence, and most often you will not complete your entire sentence, you will at some point be granted parole. You'll get out before you've done your time. Still, regardless, that's just me. If you don't respect law and you break federal law, then you lose your ability for the rest of your life to participate in the creation of law. That's just how I see it. Bernie Sanders has never agreed with that. He has long fought to restore voting rights for felons who've completed prison sentences. Completing, I think, is very loosely defined. Now, Bernie wants to go a big step further. Not a little step, a big step further. He's arguing that those currently behind bars should also be able to vote. People in prison for breaking federal law should be able to vote, is what he's saying. These are people who have broken law. They want to participate. He wants them to participate in the creation of law with their vote. Now, from his perspective, it's not about the creation of law. It's about getting votes. It's about ensuring that Democrats win elections, that leftists, socialists, communists win elections. Because all the stats, all the credible studies say that people who commit crimes vote Democrat. The vast majority of them do. Bernie was in Muscatine, Iowa Saturday, and he was asked if those in prison should have the right to vote. And he's making another bid for the presidency, the Democrat nomination. He said, "I think that's absolutely the direction we should go. In my state, what we do is separate. You're paying a price. You committed a crime. You're in jail. That's bad. But you're still living in American society, and you have a right to vote. I believe in that. Yes, I do." So that is the thinking of this man whose thought processes are so damaged that he, in the past, has reveled with communists. He has participated in drinking and singing communist songs with communist people. This is the man who preaches democratic socialism, which is basically just voting yourself into non-existence. Vermont and Maine are the only states to allow felons currently serving their sentences to vote. The issue of voting rights for felons is in the spotlight in Iowa, the state that votes first in the presidential caucus and primary calendar. The Hawkeye State and Kentucky, the only two in the nation to permanently disenfranchise everyone with felony convictions from voting. Wow. Iowa GOP Governor Kim Reynolds is pushing for a constitutional amendment to allow convicts to have their voting rights restored after they've served their sentences. Bowing to political pressure, I might add. But last week, the Republican-controlled state Senate torpedoed that plan, likely killing it for the year. Good for them. Sanders took to Twitter then to write this. "This is a disappointing setback for voting rights in Iowa." Mr. Sanders, the setback happened when they broke federal law and became federal criminals, felons. That's when the setback happened. They did it to themselves. That's how laws work, Senator Sanders. That's how laws work. The state didn't break the law for them. Their next-door neighbor didn't break the law for them. They broke the law. And they suffer the consequences for breaking the law. And since they broke the law, they should not have the right to participate in the creation of laws ever again. Voting rights in 36 states in the District of Columbia are restored to felons after they've completed their sentences, with laws varying to factor in parole and probation. Presidential candidate Senator Elizabeth Warren, Pocahontas of Massachusetts, was asked about the issue a week ago as the Massachusetts Democrat was campaigning in Iowa. She called for felons who have served their times to have the right to vote, but she stopped short of advocating that those actually in prison be able to vote. She said, "While they're incarcerated, I think that's something we can have more conversation about." In other words, she believes they should have the right to vote because she knows they would vote for her, but she knows also she can't say that out loud. These are political weasels we're dealing with here. Last November, voters in Florida approved a constitutional amendment restoring the right to vote for the 1.4 million felons who've finished serving their sentences. Florida was the most populous of 10 states that permanently disenfranchised some people with criminal convictions. Last April, Democratic Governor Andrew Cuomo of New York signed an executive order restoring voting rights for felons on parole. And in 2016, Virginia's governor at the time, Democrat Terry McAuliffe, took executive action to restore voting rights to former felons. You see a common thread here? Democrats granting rights to felons. Why do they do this? I've already said why they do this. Because they know what the statistics say, that the vast majority of the felons will vote Democrat. That's why. If these people had had a life change and their minds had been radically renewed when they were in prison and they were voting conservative, independent conservative, or Republican, these people would be fighting to ban them from voting for the rest of their lives. But since they know the stats tell them these people are likely to vote Democrat, they're all for restoring their voting rights when they get out of prison, and they want them to have the right while they're in the Gray Bar Hotel. Opponents of allowing those in prison to vote argue that if you're not willing to follow the law, then you should not have a role in making the law for everyone. That's what I've been saying. Either directly by voting on referendums and ballot initiatives or indirectly by electing lawmakers. I completely agree with that. The whole point of incarceration is to separate felons from society, not allow them to participate in it. The entire purpose for this is Democrats expanding the pool of potential voters. Don't be fooled. That's what this is all about. Democrats want to win by hook or by crook, or by allowing crooks to vote. We'll get back on the crazy train after the break, as today's edition of The Daily Perspective continues. This is The Daily Perspective. Hi there, Mark Congleton with you. Thanks so much for signing up for the newsletter, by the way. That little family is getting bigger every day, and I appreciate the fact that you're sharing it with your friends. I sent out a link yesterday to make it easier. And just scroll back through the Mark and Mac Show or Daily Perspective Facebook pages, and you'll find that direct link to go sign up and become part of the little growing family that's getting the daily newsletter from The Daily Perspective. And what that is, primarily, is the notes from the show. Like the direct links to the article on Bernie Sanders and the rest of the topics we'll talk about. Plus, the ones I don't get a chance to talk about. For example, the first segment this morning was completely off the wall. It was not in my notes. Sadly, that won't be in the notes today. So that bumped what I was going to talk about back to the second segment, and so on and so on. The dominoes will just keep on falling because that's just going to eliminate a couple of things that I intended to talk about today because something struck me at the top of the show, and boom, everything started falling from there. So you'll still get the notes on the stuff I don't get to every day. Sometimes I roll that over into the next day. Sometimes it'll sit in the stack. I'll keep shuffling until one day, you know, I really need to talk about that, and I'll pull it to the top and talk about it. But you'll have it in your inbox at that time anyway. See, you're ahead of the game. Plus, from time to time, something strikes the gray matter between my ears, and I start typing, and you get something besides the show notes. And you'll also be the first to find out when something major is going to happen. That's how I'll notify you. So, and there are some major things which could be happening. I can't really talk about just yet, but hey, we'll let you know as soon as I can for sure know and know that it's okay to tell you. Did that make sense? Doesn't matter. Okay. Okay, so we were on the crazy train with Bernie Sanders, and we're still on the crazy train. Yep, because, ladies and gentlemen, somebody thinks he can beat Donald Trump in 2020. And they think he can beat him good. He'll do it. and he won't ask you for any money. Yep. Who is this person? Alec Baldwin. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Alec Baldwin believes he can beat Donald Trump. He suggested he's interested in running for president. He says, if I ran for president, would you vote for me? He said this on Twitter yesterday. I won't ask you for any money. Then he said, and I promise I will win. Beating Trump would be so easy, so easy, so easy. And then he followed up with another tweet saying, these tweets save me millions in polling. In other words, a lot of other clueless people responded to him and said, yes, run, please run, run. Because these people, as I said, are clueless. Now, you know that Alec Baldwin and President Trump have been butting heads for a while over everything from politics to the Baldwin's impression of Trump on Saturday Night Live. The two publicly had a spat in February when Trump sent a tweet criticizing Baldwin's impersonation of him on SNL, and the actors responded by questioning if the president was directly threatening his personal safety. Paranoid much? Trump sent a tweet directly calling out SNL for being biased against his administration and Republicans in general. Quote, nothing funny about tired Saturday Night Live on fake news NBC. Question is, how do the networks get away with these total Republican hit jobs without retribution? Likewise, for many other shows. Very unfair. Should be looked into. This is the real collusion. He tweeted that back in February. And Baldwin responded to Trump's tweet and asked whether or not the president's comments counted as a threat against him and his family. Here's what that said. I wonder if a sitting president exhorting his followers that my role in a TV comedy qualifies me as an enemy of the people constitutes a threat to my safety and to that of my family. Wow. See, now Alec Baldwin is a victim. God love him. I just wonder, hey, Mr. Baldwin, have you fought over a parking spot lately? Beat anybody up? Have you, here's a good question. Have you screamed at your daughter in a message on her phone?
I want to tell you something, okay? And I want to leave a message for you right now, because again, it's 10:30 here in New York on a Wednesday. And once again, I've made an ass of myself trying to get to a phone to call you at a specific time. When the time comes for me to make the phone call, I stop whatever I'm doing, and I go and I make that phone call at 11 o'clock in the morning in New York, and if you don't pick up the phone, at 10 o'clock at night, and you don't even have that phone turned on, I want you to know something, okay? I'm tired of playing this game with you. I'm leaving this message with you to tell you, you have insulted me for the last time. You have insulted me. You don't have the brains or the decency as a human being. I don't give a that you're 12 years old or 11 years old, or that you're a child, or that your mother is a thoughtless pain in the who doesn't care about what you do as far as I'm concerned. You have humiliated me for the last time with this phone. And when I come out there next week, I'm going to fly out there for the day just to straighten you out on this issue. I'm going to let you know just how disappointed in you I am and how angry I am with you that you've done this to me again. You've made me feel like shit, and you've made me feel like a fool over and over and over again. And this crap you pull on me with this phone situation that you would never dream of doing to your mother, and you do it to me constantly and over again. I am going to get on a plane, and I'm going to come out there for the day, and I'm going to straighten your ass out when I see you. Do you understand me? I'm going to really make sure you get it. Then I'm going to get on a plane, and I'm going to turn around, and I'm going to come home. So you better be ready Friday, the 20th, to meet with me. So I'm going to let you know just how I feel about what a rude little pig you really are. You are a rude, thoughtless little pig, okay?
So, just how old was this little girl he was talking to? 11. She was 11 years old at the time. This was a few years ago. This is how this guy spoke to an 11-year-old child. Yeah, he's presidential material. Don't you think? Aren't you behind him? This is the guy you want in the White House. This is the guy you want with his finger able to touch the button, the big red button. This is the guy you want with the nuclear codes. This is the guy you want in charge of your tax dollars. This is the guy. Oh, yeah, it's so clear now. What fools we have all been. This is the man who should be in charge of everything about the United States of America. This is the guy who should be representing your interests to the rest of the world. This is the guy who should be our chief diplomat. This is the man who should be the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. This stellar character is the man we should present to the rest of the world as a representative of the values of the United States of America. This guy! How could we have been so foolish for all these years? Alec Baldwin for president! Yeah. That's absurd. It's absolutely, incredibly absurd. God love him. He is an idiot. And he believes his own PR. He believes he's the man. And what's sad is that there are other people who believe the same thing, and those people vote. And here's something for you to think about. They also drive, and you share the road with them every day on your way to and from wherever you work. That's scary. Alec Baldwin. Someone who would scream and call his 11-year-old baby girl a fat little rude pig. That's who you want for president. Then again, scum like that are already in Washington, D.C. and have been for a long, long time. The only difference is we don't have recordings of them screaming at their children. We do have other stories about them. Oh, let's just spin the big old wheel of chance and come up with... Oh, here's one. Former Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat from Nevada. Bless his heart, he lost his legal battle against a medical device manufacturer. Just happened this week. Failed to recover from injuries he says he sustained when an exercise band snapped back at him during a workout. Now, I know that there was some talk, and we enjoyed it when it happened, about he and his brother having a fight and getting beat up. Turns out that was a fraud. Somebody actually circulated that just, you know, to poke at him. So he really did. He really did injure himself with an exercise band. And I know about these because I've got a few because I've just been through this rehab process. The Las Vegas Review-Journal reports that it took jurors an hour. Well, it took him a whole hour to decide that Reid didn't deserve the $50,000 he was demanding from Ohio-based Hygienic Intangible Property Holding Company, the Hygienic Corporation, and Performance Health LLC, who make the TheraBand, a large physical therapy rubber band used in Reid's case to strengthen arm muscles. The Daily Wire is reported on the case and says Reid was claiming that he was using the band as directed, looped around a doorknob in his bathroom when the band slipped from his grasp and he fell on a marble floor, sustaining a concussion, broken orbital bones, severe disfigurement to his face, bruising and lacerations, blah, blah, blah. The bottom line, the jurors decided he wasn't telling the truth. They saw through him. Bless his heart, poor old Harry is so accustomed to freely lying about everything in an environment where lies are normal. He can't cope where the truth is required. Poor Harry. Bless his heart. I feel sorry that he's lost vision in that eye, that he actually has suffered some injury from what happened, but... Then he tried to take an exercise, but, you know, even his exercise consultants told him he was doing it wrong. And the jury believed them. for being part of the Daily Perspective. It's good to have you along today. It's a... This thing about Harry Reid, I need to go back and finish because there's more to this story. And there's something else I need to talk about, so I really need to keep an eye on the clock. So help me out with that, okay? Now, this accident he had left him nearly blind in his right eye. And according to him, it was the impetus behind his retirement from the Senate at the age of 75. Can I just step aside for a moment here with a thought, an aside? And that is, he's 75, he's got tons and tons and tons of money. His only reason for staying in the Senate is the lust for power. That's it. I mean, there are people in their 80s. In their 80s, Dianne Feinstein. I mean, these people on the Democrat side, in their octogenarians, and they get up and go to work every day. I mean, wow. And they keep campaigning to go back. Think about that. When you're 75, you're 85, if you had the kind of money these people have, would you be getting up and going in every day? No. No. You'd be in your condo in Barbados. That's where you'd be. I know I would. But Reid's case wasn't even out of the opening statements before things started to turn sour for him, because opposing counsel kept reiterating that Reid had been instructed by congressional physical trainers to improve his foot stance, balance, and technique while he was using these resistance bands at his doctor's recommendation. But he wasn't following the orders. Reid had thrown out the band that had snapped as well, so they couldn't even be sure it was the brand he was suing. But the real trouble seemed to be, as the defense attorney put it, that he couldn't keep his story straight even when he was under oath. He said, the one thing we do know is he struggles with telling the truth. He blamed the injuries he sustained from the broken band for ending his career in the Senate, and he told two different stories about how he was using the band when it snapped. So he's lying, and then he's lying about lying. And like I said, bless his heart, he can't survive in an environment where the truth is valued. You go into a court of law, you've got other lawyers who are going to be watching every word you say, and as a result, they're going to catch you when you lie, eventually. So Harry Reid has suffered a health care issue, and I feel sorry for him that he's lost the vision in that eye, that things are bad for him. But at the same time, I don't feel sorry for him because he did it to himself, because he refused to follow the directions given to him. And then, compounding that, he decided to make some more money by taking these people to court. So not only was he stupid, he was greedy. And this is the kind of people who want to dictate to you how you can have your health care handled. They want to model your health care after health care in the UK. And that brings us to another story. Health care rationing is a regular part of the UK, the United Kingdom, which has nationalized health care in a way Democrats here in the States want to. But this rationing leads to consequences. And we, people like me, tell you all the time, when the government's in control of healthcare, it only gets worse. Hundreds of elderly citizens go blind every year while waiting for eye surgeries. The latest report on this issue comes from the Times of London. The Times reports that the latest survey from the Royal College of Ophthalmologists, the RCO, found rationing of cataract surgery continues even after guidance was issued suggesting patients not have the surgery delayed. Do you see what's happening here? Real experts were telling government, quote, experts, end quote, they should not delay this surgery because there are bad results when you do. The National Health Service has ignored instructions to end cataract treatment rationing in defiance of official guidance 2 years ago. That's according to a survey by the RCO. The outlet, The Times, reported that removing cataracts was one of the most common NHS procedures. More than 400,000 such surgeries are conducted each year. 2 years ago, the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence, by the way, that spells out the word nice, stated that patients requiring cataract surgery should not have to wait until they're almost blind to receive treatment. But that seems to be the case even now. Mike Burden, he's the president of the RCO, told the Times, "Nothing's changed. We can't have a situation where NICE is set up to make these decisions and local health groups simply say, we don't like the answer, and deprive the elderly population of the chance of a better life. I'm bitterly disappointed." He called cataract surgery probably the most life-transforming procedure the NHS does. Helen Lee, the policy manager for the Royal National Institute of Blind People, stressed the importance of cataract surgery in a statement to the Times, saying, "Cataracts can have a dramatic impact on someone's ability to lead a full and independent life, potentially stopping them from driving and increasing their chance of serious injury by falling. The guidelines provided by NICE are in place for a very good reason and make it clear that cataract surgery is highly cost-effective and should not be rationed. It is nonsensical for clinical commissioning groups to deny patients this crucial treatment." And, of course, the NHS pushed back. Chief Executive of the NHS Clinical Commissions, Julie Wood, told the London Times that NICE guidance is not mandatory and clinical commissioners must have the freedom to make clinically led decisions that are in the best interest of both individual patients and their wider local populations. The NHS does not have unlimited resources. Now, this is just the latest report on the lack of access to important eye surgeries. Last June, The Telegraph reported that patients were going blind while waiting for treatment for glaucoma and age-related macular degeneration. A survey at that time found that up to 22 patients were going blind or partially blind each month waiting for treatment. The problem was also reported in 2013. Then, more than 4 in 10, 40% of NHS ophthalmologists said they had patients who had gone blind while waiting for treatment. This is government health care. This is what happens when politicians practice medicine, when they manage the resources for your medical care. Now, if you are young enough not to be concerned about cataracts, you have a wake-up call coming. Because at some point in your life, you could very well be affected by cataracts. My wife, several years ago, ended up having cataract surgery. She wasn't aware of how bad her vision had become. And afterwards, she talked forever about how amazing the world looked around her. I myself have got a little cataract issue going on, and it won't be long before I have something done about that. Here in America, people who face this kind of issue make a phone call, make an appointment, and go have it tended to. Your health insurance covers a portion, you cover the rest, and your vision is restored. In countries with managed care, managed by government, like the UK, that our Democrats are telling us is an example, a successful example that we should follow, 22 people a month are going blind. Going blind because of government-run health care. That's just one story of how bad health care managed by a government is. There are many more. All you have to do is a little Google search, and you'll find those stories. You'll find stories of dead bodies waiting in the hallways to be tended to, of patients drinking out of potted plant containers because they can't get people to bring them water in their rooms. Just do a little research and you'll see how bad those things are. And yet, they tell us, oh, that'll never happen here, which is pretty much what they were told there. And that's it for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you tomorrow. on the Wednesday edition of the Daily Perspective. Bye-bye.